at Bible study, we were discussing the best translations of the Bible. And that translations are best when they meet the need, whatever the need is of the moment. Therefore, usually, here we read the New Revised Standard Version, it's in your pew, because we believe it is at the moment the most accurately rendered translation in a language we can understand. However, we also noted that sometimes we need something in a language that is more immediate and more direct, even if it's not a really direct translation. And so we read from the Message today, which is often easier to understand. And so then, I was preparing for this sermon. And in Luke 4, it says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. The blessing of the Lord has been given to me." But it was noted to me by one of the people I was reading, Walter Bowie, who edited the very first edition of the Revised Standard Version, not the New Revised Standard Version, back in the 40s, that this is one of his favorite passages of the Bible, and he asked that we read it in the King James Version, despite the fact that he was one of the translators of the RSV. And I'll tell you why in a minute. So this is the King James Version. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord." He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted. This line is actually left out of the new translations because there's dispute about whether it was in the original. But it is deeply relevant, Bowie says, to this actual spirit of the whole of Jesus' ministry. Now, pagan ideals of gods and goddesses who come to earth often assumed the godlike ones came in times of power or came to bestow power. Even the common understanding of the role of the Messiah was often about God bestowing power on Israel. Instead, Jesus brought a consciousness about the presence of God not only on the heights and on the mountaintops, but also in the valleys. Not only in the moments when life soars up on wings, but in those other moments when it walks, as Bowie said, with lame and weary feet upon a heavy road. Now, it's interesting that one of the greatest questions we have of God is why we suffer. And why do those we love suffer? And yet, Jesus never saw it as his mission to explain suffering. He gives no explanation of the world's inescapable paradox, I'm quoting again, of sorrow and seeming evil. Instead, he showed that sorrow might be redeemed through his revelation of a spirit which could transfigure it with courage, steady it with trust. That has been the effect of his spirit wherever people turn to Jesus for comfort. And Walter Bowie wrote, "Whenever sad people think of him, something happens to their sadness. They may not understand it any better, but there is newness in the way they feel. Their iciness is melted. All that was hard and frozen turns to a stream of gentle emotion which waters their souls, in their souls, a garden where the flowers of fragrant peach begin to grow. They are not afraid of sadness now, for the love of God is walking by their side." It's not as simple as that, we know. But Bowie was not describing some unattainable ideal, but his own personal experience of grief and sorrow. He writes as a man who grew up in a place and a time when men feared sorrow, for men were not expected to show grief. They feared not just the loss that brings on sorrow, but that the sorrow itself would unman them. It would change their place in society. And that kind of fear can become anger where sorrow has no expression. Christ makes the sorrow itself holy. Honest expression of grief is not something to fear in the presence of Christ. Sorrow acknowledges the truth of ourselves and our world. Jesus came to heal the brokenhearted, to redeem sorrow not by removing it, but by bearing us up and acknowledging the honesty and necessity of the feeling and the expression. And that's what is meant when Bowie says, "They are not afraid of sadness now, for God is walking by their side." Now, the next thing that Jesus says, quoting the words of the prophet Isaiah, was that he came to preach recovery of sight to the blind. But Jesus often chastises people who think he's only there for the welfare of their bodies. Those who chase him down demanding bread. Those who demand physical action by him against others. Now, we hear a lot about physical healing in the Bible, but we know that this is not primarily what Jesus is talking about because of the angry reaction of the people around him in several places in this story when he talks about vision and blindness. In the Gospel of John, the Pharisees get really angry when he preaches that he is here to make the blind see. And they demand, "Are we blind too?" And Jesus answers, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now you say, 'We can see,' your guilt remains." The great gift, the blessing, is that Jesus opened people's eyes not only to the wonder and majesty of God, but to the nearness of God. He helped them see the light of God's presence in the ordinary places and the ordinary people and ordinary lives. "I have come," Jesus quotes, "I have come to proclaim release to the captives." Now, that's not just about swinging wide a prison door for those who are imprisoned by others. And Bowie, in particular, wrote that this is about those who have voluntarily made themselves captives. And he wrote those words in about 1951, after the fall of Nazi Germany and during the rise of communism. And there was great fear of both and the fear of despots. Now, when I read these words, it seems like a prophecy today. He says, "Individuals feel a sense of inadequacy and frustration. They grow hopeless as to working out any successful destiny of their own. And there is, as Eric Fromm put in the title of his book, an escape from freedom. People deliberately seek to yield up their individualities and with all the burden of their unsure choices to some masterful spirit who claims the right to rule. Thus, millions of people in Nazi Germany submitted themselves with a kind of fanatical relief to Adolf Hitler. And others find a fierce sense of power by surrendering their own independence and becoming unquestioning devotees of the party line." That's a direct quote. That kind of captivity degrades the dignity of the human soul. Yet the strange fact is that the supreme fulfillment of a life isn't out of captivity, but through it. If only we recognize to whom we give our souls. And that concept, that it is to God to whom we offer our freedom, not just the God that offers freedom to us, is as old as Moses. I love an old, 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 it's not old, 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 that would go back another 1,000 years, an old, old, old poem by John Donne, and he wrote this in 1625, and don't worry, I'll translate. Reason, your viceroy in me should defend, but it is captive and proves weak or untrue. Yet dearly I love you and would be loved fain, but am betrothed unto your enemy. Divorce me, untie me, break that knot again. Take me to you, imprison me, for I, except you enthrall me, never shall be free. And a translation of that has been, my reason should defend me from evil, but instead my reason is captive and proves weak or untrue. And yet dearly I love you, and I want to be loved by you. But I have betrothed myself to your enemy, tied myself to the adversary. Divorce me from the enemy, untie me, break that knot that holds me, and take me to you. And will you imprison me? For except you enthrall me, imprison me, hold me, I never shall be free. I came to proclaim release to the captives. I came to heal the brokenhearted, to preach the recovery of sight to the blind. These are the gifts, the blessings that we proclaimed today, that we come here seeking freedom through captivity to a God who knows sorrow and who demands that we see and who offers a kind of freedom that is not free of cost, but is a chance to live our best lives. The Spirit of the Lord is upon us, for God has anointed us to proclaim good news to the poor, to bind up the brokenhearted, to both blind us with radiance and illuminate outrageous evil, and who somehow, in the midst of sorrow, offers us a kind of companionship where we might find joy. Amen. And that being said, we're going to sing, "The House of Our God is Not Just for the Holy."